It is a privilege, an honor, and something of an awesome responsibility to ask me to speak in Ann's memory. And I hope you'll bear with me if I begin and end with a few personal memories. I have a very fond memory of a Shabbat Pesach before any of us ever went away for Pesach, coming for Shabbat lunch on Shabbat of Pesach to Canfield, and sitting at the table and hearing Lee and Ann, Alea Shalom, and the kids all sing all the way through Shir HaShirim with all the songs, and watching and hearing Ann's voice and the way that the music became such a part of her and made everyone around the table just feel uplifted was, this goes back a number of years, never forget it, made a real impression. So I thought, what better way to honor Ann's memory than talk about music? And music, in a sense, is the theme of what's coming up. We have the mitzvah, the commandment that we're going to fulfill this coming Tuesday and Wednesday will be a musical mitzvah, a musical commandment. What the nature of that commandment is, there's the rub. And we've got to see how that plays out for this mysterious passage from Maimonides with which we're going to begin. It is a passage in Maimonides' Great Code, the Mishnei Torah, and it is not in the context of blowing shofar. It's not in the laws of shofar. It's in the laws of tshuva, the laws of return, of returning to God, which is what this season is all about. But to be honest, it is what our entire life is all about. Rabbi Eliezer was famous for saying, you should always do tshuva one day before you die. And the student said, well, how do you know when that day is going to be? He says, aha, today's a good day to start. So return is something that is part of the Jewish soul. But this is a season that's devoted to focusing on it. So Maimonides says as follows. I'll read it in the Hebrew. The English is underneath. Afal pishat tkiat shofar b'rosh hashanah gzeirat hakatuv. Even though blasting the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is God's law, it's not presented with a reason. It's not presented in the context of some greater program. Nonetheless, he says, and this is very atypical for Maimonides, remez yeshbo. There is an allusion, a hint here. Klomar, and what's the hint? Uru uru yishanim yishanim yishanatchem. Those of you who are sleeping, wake up. And the simplest way to read this Rambam, although we're going to take it much further, is it's an alarm clock. Time to wake up. V'hakitzu nirdamim mitar dematchem. Wake up, you slumberers, from your slumber. V'chapsu b'maaseichem. Look inward, reflect on your deeds. V'chizru b'tshuva. Return to God. V'zichru borachem. Remember God. And then he goes on to describe what does it mean to be asleep. But I want to focus on this line, as you see, I highlighted it. It's a beautiful image, and it's popularly shared this time of year. And it will probably be shared in those shuls where the rabbis have the chutzpah to give a speech this year, if they're indoors, of more than 3 minutes, at the talk given before shofar. It's a very popular passage. When I shared it with Rabbi Dunner, he immediately said, I love that, but one of my favorite Rambams. But I think there's something much deeper going on than just an alarm clock. It's not just that the shofar makes noise to wake you up. It is what those noises are that speak to us, and that's what we're here about. We're here about the music. I want to talk for a few moments about what tshuva is. Tshuva means return. In the simplest sense, what does return mean? It means we return to God. And that's the terminology used in the Bible. Return to God. V'shavta ad Adonai Elohecha. We hear in this week's reading. The prophet Hosea says in chapter 14, verse 2, Shuva Yisrael ad Adonai Elohecha. Return to God. That's what we imagine returning to be. But if we take a more delicate look at the way that the notion is developed in the prophets, we'll see that it's much more textured than that and much more complex. We have a passage in Malachi, the prophet from the beginning of the Second Temple period at Source 2, where the prophet speaking in God's voice says, Shuvu Eli, v'ashuva Aleichem. You return to me, and I'll return to you. Now, right away, we're hit by something new. We're supposed to return to God, but that's only half the equation. God has to return to us. Because if it feels that God is far away, that means we're both distanced. And God is promising, I'm not asking you to go all the way. Return, and I'll return, and we'll meet. But what's critical is God says, you return, then I'll return. You make the first move. And that's echoed by his earlier colleague, Zechariah, who says almost the same thing. Shuvu Eli Nu'um Adonai Tzvaot Vashuv Aleichem. Again, you return to me, and then I'll return to you. However, the Jewish people have a different plan. That's God's plan. The Jewish people have a different plan. And the Jewish people's plan is, we agree with you, God, that it should be a two-way street, and that we have to meet in the middle. Look at how the Jewish people respond in the shadows of the destruction of the temple. The second to last verse in the book of Lamentations, the book of Echa that we read on the saddest night of the year, on Tisha B'Av, ends with what words that we all know very well? Hashiveinu Adonai Elecha v'nashuva. You return us to you, then we'll return. In other words, you make the first move. Now, this sounds to some extent like not a servant to a master, but rather two colleagues, or if you will, a couple that's having a fight. Yeah, we should get together, but you make the first move. Unless that sound blasphemous, please take a look at the next set of passages. I started the shiur with sharing a story with you about the Song of Songs. The Song of Songs is a love song. It's a love song between a king who is a shepherd and a princess. And they keep looking for each other and keep trying to find each other. But one thing struck me when looking at Shir HaShirim, and there's always many things that strike me about Shir HaShirim, because Shir HaShirim, we understand, is in the Bible because it's not to be taken on its literal level as the true meaning. The true meaning is deeper. The true meaning is about the relationship between man and God, between the Jewish people and God, between the individual and God. And in this beautiful love song, what does she say? Kol dodi hine zeba. And I apologize for going back to it, but in my mind, I'm right now hearing Lee and Anne and Aliza and Tali and Donnie singing, Kol dodi hine zeba. I hear the voice of my beloved. That's what she says. In the meantime, what does he say? Hashmi'ini et kolech, in Source 6. I want to hear your voice. So I want to hear your voice, says God to the Jewish people. And the Jewish people say, I hear your voice. On the one hand, there are the demands going back and forth, and on the other hand, there's the attraction going back and forth. And it's about a voice. We want to hear God's voice, but God wants to hear our voice. The relationship between us, between God and his people, is a romantic relationship. It is also a court relationship. It is also a servant relationship, but it is also, and perhaps chiefly, a romantic relationship. One of the most beautiful songs that we're going to sing over and over on Yom Kippurim is a song of love to God that starts with the words, Ki anu amecha ve'ata Eloheinu. We are your people, you are God. Ve'ata malkeinu. And then we go on describing our relationship with God in every possible way. We're the flock and you're the shepherd. We are the lover and you are the beloved. And it's all just a love song, looking at all the different angles of the relationship. And as if that weren't enough, we have perhaps the most popular verse in all of Song of Songs, certainly in Jewish circles, is the verse that people like to associate with the month that we are now finishing, which is, Ani l'dodi v'dodi li. What he says is, what she says is, Ani l'dodi, I belong to my beloved, and my beloved belongs to me. But that's not the only time that shows up. And by the way, look at the end of the verse. It's verse 8. Ani l'dodi v'dodi li haro'eh b'shoshanim. But look right above it. Dodi li v'ani lo haro'eh b'shoshanim. These two keep talking about each other in parallel terms, in similar terms, in identical terms about each other. I want to hear your voice. I want to hear your voice. I belong to you. I belong to you. It is a gorgeous relationship, and I want to hear your voice. So let's talk about the voice that we're going to hear. The Torah commands us that on the first day of the seventh month, which is this Monday night, this Tuesday, we are at the end of the sixth month in the Jewish year. I know, how do you have a new year start on the seventh month? That's another shiur. That's next year. On the first day of the seventh month, you are to have a zichron truah, the commemoration of a truah. And truah is going to be one of the key words. I'm not going to translate it yet, but it's some sort of a sound. The Torah also commands us, as you see in Source 11, that on the first day of the seventh month, we're to have a yom truah, a day of this sound. But this isn't the only place that we see this commandment. This is a yearly commandment. We have a commandment that comes so infrequently, we say it comes once a yovel. Once a yovel means rarely. But it actually comes from this because yovel happens every 50 years. And it hasn't happened for 2,000 plus years, but yovel in ideal times would happen every 50 years. And the Torah commands us in Source 10 that on the 10th day of the seventh month, in other words, Yom HaKippurim, in the middle of the day, what do you do? V'havarta shofar truah b'chodesh ha-shvi'im b'asor l'chodesh b'yom HaKippurim ta'aviru shofar b'chol artzachem. You are to blast a shofar of truah, of this sound. On that day, blast a shofar. The rabbis are kind of confused and take a look at it and say, I don't understand why it says blast a shofar, twice in the same verse. Because as we all know, legal texts in the Torah are very economic in their wording. There's never extra words in a legal text in the Torah. Stories, prophecy, poetry, yes, but not legal text. And so for this repetition of blast a shofar, the rabbis wake up to it. And they say, well, let's take a look at it. We know that a truah is some sort of a broken sound. It's some sort of a wail, perhaps, or even a yell, but it's broken. It's staccato. We don't know what kind. But look at the verse, and it says, Ta'aviru shofar truah. Havartem shofar truah. Lahavir indicates, the rabbis tell us, indicates a strong, single, uninterrupted, royal blast. And from the structure of the verse, and you can see it with the highlighted words, they understand that every time you blow a truah, some sort of a staccato, some sort of a wailing, some sort of a sighing, it has to be preceded by a straight, royal, single blast, a heralding sound, and it has to be followed by a heralding sound. And that's why on Rosh Hashanah, we start every shofar series with Tkia, and we hear a royal trumpet. Ta-da! And we follow the truah with the same thing. And in the middle, we have some sort of a broken sound, three different versions of the broken sound, because we want to get it right. We do it every possible which way. The rabbis also learned that from passage 12, where we talk about the commandment that was given to Moses in the desert to fashion silver cornets. And the cornets are supposed to be blasted, not a shofar, they're made out of silver. They're supposed to be blasted at certain occasions. And the word that's used, as you can see highlighted, is utkatem truah, truah yitku'u. And so the rabbis say, aha, what do you see from here? That you will have a tkiah, a truah, and then a tkiah. In other words, the order should always be tkiah, tkiah, and in the middle, something else. In the middle of this broken sound. And that's exactly what we do on Rosh Hashanah. Question is, what do these sounds represent? And keep in mind that we're still trying to get back to Maimonides' statement that when you hear the shofar, it should bring you to tshuva. Why is that? We have one of the beautiful, many, many beautiful passages that we read in the Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, when we read all sorts of verses from all over the Bible about God being king, and about God remembering us, and about the shofar. We have a fantastic pasuk. I mean, it's not me to give a check mark to the Bible, but a fantastic verse from Isaiah. V'haya b'yom ahu yitaka b'shofar gadol. There will be the tkiah, the blasting of a shofar gadol. And what will happen? Uva'u ha'ovdim be'eretz Ashur v'anidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim. All those who are dispersed to the east and to the west will all come. V'ishtachavu l'adonai b'har kodesh v'Yerushalayim. They will bow before God at the holy mountain in Yerushalayim. This is what we call the shofaros Mashiach. This is the blast that announces Messiah has come. And that's the shofar gadol. Many people think that that's the symbolism of the shofar we blast at the end of Yom Kippur, the tkiah gedolah, the single long blast. Who's going to make that sound? What do we anticipate? Who's going to sound this shofar at the end of history to announce that Mashiach has come? Who's the Baal Tkiah? Who is it? The answer is God. Now you think of God making a sound with the shofar? Of course he did, because please take a look at source 14 and 15. In sources 14 and 15, we have a description of the most powerful stand that humanity has ever experienced. Well over a million people standing at the foot of Mount Sinai experiencing a light and sound show that can never be replicated. Thunder and lightning and smoke and you name it, and kol shofar, the sound of a shofar. There was no little guy behind the curtain like in The Wizard of Oz blowing the shofar. This is God's sound. And God blasts the shofar. And it's called kol gadol, a big sound. By the way, if God makes a sound, it's a big sound. It can also be a quiet sound. But it's a big sound. So when we come back to the verse in Isaiah that says, Yitaka b'shofar gadol, there will be a big shofar sound, that's God. That's the sound of God. Okay. But what about the other sound? That's the sound of God, and that's the sound of a tkiah. Ta-da! That's God. Take a look, please, at verse... At source 16. And from there on, you're going to see several verses, including the first two of them are read publicly, respectively, after and before we actually blow shofar. Ashrei ha'am. I see some Baalei Tefillah in front of me. They're about to, Ashrei ha'am. Any Baalei Tefillah here? Okay. Ashrei ha'am. Happy is the people who know how to make a truah. And look at the next verse, which we read just before blowing shofar. It's my custom, after we read those six verses responsively, I hold the shofar up and I say this verse out loud before saying the blessing. Allah Elohim b'truah. God has risen up with a truah. So where's this truah coming from? And you take a look at the word truah as it's used in just a few selections. Truth is, if I We're going to give you all the selections of Torah and Tanakh. You'd have a book. I selected carefully. There's an amazing passage in the book of Ezra, a book that's not studied very widely. And the book of Ezra, which is from the beginning of the Second Temple period, describes events. The first five chapters happen before Ezra even came around. They're history. And it describes an event which, to some extent, correlates, kind of comes up again, and some of the things that some of us grew up with, some of us who are older grew up with. Because some of us grew up in a generation where the older generation of adults, many of them were Holocaust survivors, and we, the younger generation, was not. And we would sometimes attend the same celebration and have two opposite feelings. I'm at Simchas Torah, and I'm jumping around as a kid. And I'm screaming. And perhaps I'm so excited that I might even be crying. Okay, I didn't as a kid, but. And there's an old man next to me who's also making a lot of noise, and he's crying. But he's crying because he remembers Simchas Torah as a kid in a town that was destroyed, holding the hands of his father who was murdered. And we're making the same kind of sounds, but boy, are they different. And that starts here. In the book of Ezra, it tells us that when they rebuilt the temple, there was such a cacophony that you could not tell the difference between the sound of the truah of celebration, the screaming of celebration, of the young people who had never seen a temple, and the weeping of the old people who remembered the temple when it was really something. And this is, and that cacophony, you couldn't dissect the sounds. But the word used for the celebration is truah. That's the people's sound of truah. You see that in the two verses at the bottom of the page, in source 19 and 20, the truah is not the same as kol shofar. We have yom shofar utruah, the day of the shofar and truah. Truah uvekol shofar, right in the book of Shmuel. So they're not the same. So what are they? So we're going to get to that in a minute, but a brief, more halachic aside, and not so much of an aside. What is the mitzvah that we are bound to do come Tuesday? The one mitzvah the Torah commands us to do besides take a day off on Tuesday. The mitzvah is truah. But how's the mitzvah defined here by Maimonides? Mitzvat aseh shel Torah lishmoa truat hashofar. You hear the wording? Lishmoa truat hashofar. The mitzvah is for us to hear the truah, the broken sound of the shofar in Rosh Hashanah. Our mitzvah is to hear it, which, by the way, has a profound halachic implication. It means somebody who is a deaf person, can't blow shofar for me, because he's not obligated in the mitzvah because he can't hear it. He can make the sound, but he can't hear it. The mitzvah is to hear it. If I were to plug up my ears and blow the shofar for everybody else, I didn't fulfill the mitzvah. I made the sounds. I didn't hear it. Mitzvah is to hear it. Which, by the way, is interesting because if you look at the bottom of the page, you will see that Maimonides, when it comes to the Yovel, to the Jubilee blasting, says, Mitzvat aseh litkoa b'shofar. The mitzvah is to blast the shofar. Litkoa, he uses the word tkia. And the mitzvah is for you to blast it. Means if you don't hear it, that's okay. The mitzvah is to make the sound. But on Rosh Hashanah, he doesn't just say the mitzvah is to hear it. The mitzvah is to hear the truah. Why? What's going on in here? And by the way, what's the bracha that we make, the blessing that we make before the shofar? Lishmoa kol shofar, right? Lishmoa kol shofar, unlike those opinions, Rabbeinu Tam, who says that the bracha is litkoa. We don't do it. We say the mitzvah is to hear it. We make a bracha You commanded us to hear the shofar. What is it that's going on? So I'd like to make the following suggestion. I'd like to start it with the last source. The last source is from the Tosefta. The Tosefta is for 3rd century compilation of traditions that is parallel to the Mishnah. And in the Tosefta, you have the following comment. And this Tosefta is quoted later in the Talmud, but the critical words I'm going to look at are actually modified, they're changed. The wording here is magnificent. Amar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, perhaps one of the two most famous rabbis from the rabbinic era, Hillel and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva explains the special things that we do on the three holidays and how they relate to our fate. He says, God said, I want you to offer up a little barley on Pesach so that the grain you're going to cut for the next few months will be blessed. And I want you to offer up new grain on Shavuot so the fruit of the trees will be blessed. And I want you to put water on the altar, water on the altar on Sukkot so that the rain for the coming season will be blessed. Don't mention that to Newsom or whoever takes over. And then he says, Imru lefanav malchiyot zichonot v'shofarot. God says, when you pray on Rosh Hashanah, I want you to recite paragraphs about my being king, about my remembering you, and about the shofar. Why? Malchiyot kedei shetam lichu alehem. I want you to say malchiyot because I want you to accept me as your king. Declare God is your king. And that is super the theme of the first blessing of the middle section. Zichronot, why mention Zichronot? Kedei sheyavo zichronchem letova lefanav. So that you, the remembrance of you should come up in a good way. God should remember you, whatever that may mean. The theological conundrum of God remembering, I'm not going to start there. But God should remember you. Your remembrance, the evocation of who you are should come up in a good way. And the last one. Shofarot kedei sheta'aleh tefilatchem bitru'ah lefanav. Look at those words. That your tefillah, your prayer should come up accompanied by a truah. What does that mean? So look, one paragraph up, the blessing that we make in the middle of tefillah, the last of those three additional paragraphs, ends with what words? Baruch Ata Hashem, blessed are you God, Shomea Kol Truat Amo Yisrael Barachamim. Blessed are you God who hears the voice of our truah. And you hear it compassionately. Truat, Kia, what's going on? So I'd like to make the following suggestion. Kol dodi, hinei zeba. The voice of my beloved. The voice of my beloved is the voice of God. I can't wait to hear the voice of God. But in the meantime, God wants to hear my voice. And therefore he says, Hashmini et kolech, let me hear your voice. Anina dodi v'dodi li, but he says, dodi li v'ani lo. There's a symbiosis there. There's a shuva elai, v'shuvu elai, v'shuvu alechem. Return to me and I'll return to you. And the question is, who's going to go first? And so what do we do on Rosh Hashanah? The Torah commands us to make a truah, a broken sound. The broken sound is the voice of man. The broken sound, the truah, is the voice of man. Because bottom line, we are broken. Bottom line, when we look honestly at ourselves, we are shattered. The tkiah is the voice of God. That's the sound of Mount Sinai. That's the sound of royalty. It is unbroken. It is powerful. It carries and it carries and it carries. And one day it will carry so far as to announce that Mashiach has come. So what does the Torah command us to do? It commands us to hear a truah. What does it mean to hear a truah? Listen to your own broken voice. So why do we have to have a tekiah before and after? Because if I take an honest look at myself and I realize I'm shattered, I'm absolutely lost. I've got nowhere to go. You know why I have somewhere to go? Because God's voice. I'm alone, but I'm never alone. I'm broken, but I can be fixed. I'm desperate, but there's hope. And so how is it fashioned? Tekiah, God's voice. Truah, man's voice. Tekiah, God's voice. And let's see what that means. These days, we're engaged in saying slichot, the special penitential prayers before in Rosh Hashanah, leading up to Yom Kippur. And the theme, the anthem of the slichot is a line from the book of Exodus, from Shemot, Perek Lamed Daled, chapter 34, when God announces to Moses that he's going to forgive the people, and he says, this is who I am. Who am I? Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum V'Chanun, Erech Apayim V'Rav Chesed V'Emet. He says his own name twice. And he says, I am a compassionate and gracious God, patient, filled with kindness and truth. And the rabbi is surprised. Why does it say God's name twice? I have an amazing insight. They say one of them is God's name before you sinned. And the other one is God's name after you do tshuva, after you come back. What does that mean? So imagine that you are in a very close relationship with somebody. Somebody who means everything to you. And you feel a tremendous embrace. And then you've done something to sour that relationship. The feeling that many of us might have is, I can never fix it. I can never come back. Why does God say his name a second time? After you come back, we're good as new. The rabbis say, at the end of Masechet Tanit, there were no happier days for the Jewish people than Jewish Sadie Hawkins Day, 15th of Av, and Yom Kippur. And when the rabbis comment on it in the Talmud, they say, I understand why Yom Kippur is the happiest day, but what's so happy about 15th of Av? And they have their discussion. It's obvious to them that Yom Kippur is the happiest day in the year. Of course it is. What could make you happier than for God to say, forget about the past, we're cool, we're good. Not, we'll overlook it. It didn't happen. Wow. And we start that on Rosh Hashanah because what do we hear first? Tekiah, God's voice, I love you, you're mine, I'm embracing you. Truah, but I'm broken, but I'm coming back. I embrace you again. Now, this is a complex message. It is complex textually. It is complex religiously. But it's most complex emotionally. Because we always doubt. And so you know what we do on Rosh Hashanah? Tekiah. Truah, tekiah, let's do it again. Tekiah, truah, let's do it again, and again, and again. And get that message home. And how does the entire system end? With what? A tekiah gedolah. I love you now more than before, if that were possible. Before I embraced you and that was easy. But now you actually took a situation that was difficult and you were heroic and you stood up and you came back. I loved you even more. That's the Tekiah Gedolah. And that's why the Tekiah Gedolah reminds us of the Tekiah, the blast that's going to be heard when Mashiach comes. The commandment that we fulfill on the Yovel every 50 years is a tekiah. Why? Whose voice is the tekiah? That's God's voice. What is God announcing on the Yovel? And by the way, as I mentioned earlier, it's the blast on the Yovel that we generally associate with the custom of blowing the shofar at the end of Yom Kippur. It's a remembering the Yovel. The very end of the season is the Tekiah Gdolah. And by the way, I don't know if anybody here has the custom. In some communities, there's the custom on Hoshana Rabbah, at the very end of all of the judgment season, to also blow shofar. But why is the commandment on the Yovel a Tekiah? And on Rosh Hashanah, Truah. Because on Rosh Hashanah, the mitzvah is to listen to yourself. Rosh Hashanah, the mitzvah is to start paying attention to who you are. Look inside. Get all of the other gunk away and look inside honestly and see who you are. Listen to the Truah. And that's why Rabbi Akiva says, why do I ask you to say all those verses of Shofarot? Because I want your prayer to ascend to heaven on the wings of a Truah. God wants to hear our voice, and our voice is a broken voice. That's what he loves, because that's who we are. He loves us for who we are, not for who he wants us to be. It's an amazing, amazing image. What happens on Yovel, on the other hand? That is God declaring, I am the master of the earth. Nobody here really owns anything. Any lands you might have bought in the intervening years go back to the original owners.
Nobody owns anybody.
Nobody owes anybody, exactly, Hillel. People who sold themselves into slavery go free. Because this is God's voice saying, Kili Haaretz, the land belongs to me. I'm the king. And we rejoice that the Talmud tells us that anybody who was a slave or perhaps who owned land that they had to sell would spend the first 10 days of the year partying from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. Their masters would have to let them free on Rosh Hashanah. They'd spend Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur partying. They probably didn't say Slichot. And on Yom Kippur, in the middle of the day, the court would get up and blast the shofar, and yippee-yay, we're free! We're free because God's voice came thundering through like it did at Sinai and said, you're free because I am your king and nobody else owns you. What we looked at over the course of the past 40 minutes or so was a passage in the Rambam, in Maimonides, in which he said, we started with this passage, in which he said, the shofar, even though it's God's decree, has a hint. And the hint is, wake up. Wake up. And I mentioned at the beginning that the way people generally look at that passage in Maimonides, it's an alarm clock. It's alarming, it's loud, it's over and over, it's a shattered sound. Wakes you up. But I think there's much more to it, to the Maimonides passage than that. I'm saying, here's the hint, wake up. I'm asking you to listen to your own voice. And don't think you're alone. You are sandwiched in, you are surrounded, you are embraced by God. It's an interesting piece. As much as Rosh Hashanah is also a festive day and we have meals, and Yom Kippur seems to be robbed of that, Rosh Hashanah, in a very great sense, is about the individual. And Yom Kippur is all about the congregation. How do we start Yom Kippur? V'nislach l'chol adat Yisrael v'lagera gar b'tocham ki l'chol ha'am b'shgagah. Right, the whole nation has sinned. They're going to forgive the whole nation. And we do everything together as a community. Rosh Hashanah, man stands alone. Oh, he's got other people around him. He's got a minion. Nice, but he stands alone. And when the shofar is blasted, the ideal thing to do is to close your eyes and listen inside. And listen because you're listening to your own heart. And God wants to hear it. Now, how's God going to hear it? Because when you pray on Rosh Hashanah with that feeling, the Truah is now elevating your prayer to God. And God, like the beloved, who just longs to hear the voice of his lover, hears the Truah and hears our words spoken, broken because of the Truah, says, ah, hashmi'ini et kolech, Let me hear your voice. Ki kolech arev, your voice is so sweet. And then he immediately follows it up with a tkiah saying, welcome back. So we started by looking at this passage in Maimonides. We looked at a few verses in other parts of the Nevi'im that talk about return, in which both sides agree that we both have to work on it, but each side says you go first. And it seems that God decided to step in and pull rank and says, you know what? I'm going to tell you how we'll do it. I will go first, but the mitzvah is on you. I'll arrange for the tekiah to be first, but you know what the mitzvah is? Trua. I want you to return to me, but I'm going to set everything up for you to do it. You'll hear the thundering voice of Sinai, but then do what you really have to hear is the broken voice of your own heart. And that will be followed, of course, by a tekiah. We saw even that the blessing that we say in the tefillah is that God hears kol truat amo Yisrael v'rachamim. What is it God hears? God hears the truah. That's what God listens for. We have a mitzvah, lishmoa kol shofar. We don't say lishmoa tkiyat shofar. The mitzvah for us is to listen to all the sounds. But what we're thanking God is because he hears our truah. He hears our broken sound. And we hear his voice. And anila dodiva dodi li. And that relationship ultimately comes together and is healed. As I said, it's an awesome honor, but also an awesome responsibility. For me to get up in front of dear friends, especially in front of Lee, in front of Donnie and Rifki, and to speak about Anne, Zichra Livracha. But I can think of no more appropriate topic to honor her memory than the connection between music and the heart. I will share another memory, and it's another Pesach. The first Pesach we ever spent together at the Camelback. I was with you. And I was on my own at the time, just before I got married, and I was there alone giving shiurim. And the Samsons invited me to sit at their table, which got bigger and bigger and bigger as more people brought chairs up, because that table was the table that was rocking and rolling all night. The singing that was going on there was amazing. But it was singing that was driven by spirit. And with all the beautiful voices in the family, we all knew where the spirit was coming from. And we honor Anne's memory when we sing. We honor her memory when we learn. We certainly honor her memory with trying to imitate the amazing acts of chesed that she did, of opening up her home and taking care of people. And that real human sweetness that she had towards everyone. But I believe that allowing us to listen inside to our own heart and listening to the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu together is an appropriate step for us all to take in anticipation of Rosh Hashanah, and will certainly serve as a Yad Vashem for Rachel Rivka Bat Matityahu HaKohen, Zichra Livracha. Yizichra Baruch, may her memory always be a blessing. And the way that her memory is a blessing is for us to take the lessons that those of us privileged